Listening Dog Media.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The Offside Rule with Lindsay Hooper and Natasha Dowie, promoting women's football since 2013.
David, thank you very much for joining us for this week's In the Spotlight on the Offside Rule. You wrote an article recently for Total Analysis and it caught my attention. In fact, you often tag me in a few of your articles, so I like to have a glimpse every now and again, and this in particular spiked some interest. You've been discussing how clubs can implement a singular playing style across both men's and women's football. And I think that will really buy into a lot of people's ideas that we look at the Premier League clubs and them having an affiliated women's team, and we think of a certain style of play, and we think, does that actually apply to both the men's and women's teams? And this is something that you've written about. So can you just explain what that article's premise was and what point you were trying to get across?
Yeah, so basically it was something that sparked my interest a few months ago, and I sort of started to notice little similarities between the way that certain teams played, the men's and women's teams. And I thought, actually, there are some clubs that look like they are trying to create a joint brand, and there are some that have been quite open about trying to do that, some that almost have been doing it a little bit by accident, if you like, just randomly sharing ideas. So it was a case of almost highlighting that and showing that, you know, in the future, as the women's game continues to grow, that actually there is this potential for clubs to really kind of form a joint tactical brand, if you like, and share ideas, and then potentially use that to get joint success. And that's kind of what the article was all about, really.
And Tash being on with us and being a Liverpool fan, I think we should use that as an example. So for Liverpool, there's a high press nature to the men's team. That's how Jurgen Klopp's teams play. It's very much high intensity. And so you're saying that in the future, Matt Beard would be doing the same with the women's team. Do we want that? Do we want that crossover? Or is there value in having not one set brand, but an identity per men, per women's team, rather than it being across the whole club?
I think it comes down to what each club wants, really. I mean, Liverpool are probably one of the examples where you wouldn't necessarily see that, because you've got Jurgen Klopp, who, as you say, is, you know, the aforementioned gegenpressing and all that sort of stuff. And then you've got Matt Beard, who's kind of much more kind of using the wing backs and trying to build, you know, through keeping the ball and everything. So they don't necessarily share ideas. But then you've got clubs like Spurs, where you can see the fact, like I think I said in the article, that you can see both clubs prefer to use, you know, wide threats. You've got Grace Clinton and Timo Werner, for example, both of whom have quite key roles in terms of operating in those wide areas. You've got the use of ball-playing centre-backs, Mickey van der Ven in the men's side of things, and this season, at least, Molly Bartrip in the women's side of things. So you can see, that's what I mean. But you can see there's little similarities. You can see that actually those are the signs that they are trying to almost mirror each other. But it won't work for everyone. And I'm not saying it will. And I'm not saying this is the way that everyone has to go. Because for some clubs, it won't be. It just depends on, you know, the men's team might have one direction they want to go, the women's team want to go another direction in terms of tactics and what they're looking for. And it will come down to how each is perhaps funded and is able to cope in terms of that side of things as well. So, you know, the men's side of things might be able to go and afford a big manager, and the women's team might be struggling and only able to get a, you know, someone who's not really as experienced at the top level of the game. So there's a multitude of different things that will come into consideration, but it's certainly the case from what I've found in that article that there are more clubs than people think that are almost going in this direction, where they're almost sharing ideas and, you know, they see it as the future. So, you know, it was something that I found really interesting, and I felt actually a lot of people might like to hear about if they weren't already aware of it.
Tasha's played for so many different clubs. Did you ever find this, Tash, that you felt that there was a one identity model that fitted both sides?
No, I didn't, but I actually would really buy into it. And I think if you look at, for instance, Man City and the success the men have had with their playing style, and then how that's been transferred over to the women's team and the success that they've got now in the women's game, I think that when I look at Liverpool men and, you know, how effective their style of play is, and again, fighting for the Premier League now, and it's tough, don't get me wrong. I went and watched the first team train last week and spoke to Jurgen about the counter-pressing and how demanding it is. But I think that if you see success with it, then why wouldn't you want to buy into it? And I would have loved to have maybe then, when I signed for Liverpool Women, had more of that style of play to, and then, yeah, I think then you would handpick the players, like what Dave has been saying with Tottenham Hotspur. I think the manager has handpicked the players to allow them to be able to play that playing style. I'm not too sure that maybe potentially Liverpool have handpicked players to be able to allow them to high press, counter press, but maybe moving forward, if they are wanting to step into that top three and to compete with the likes of your Arsenals, your Cities and your Chelseas, who definitely do have a real certain style of play that is more linked with the men's team. I think that's quite exciting, and I'd be all for it as a player, you know, all for under the one umbrella roof. But David, I actually really wanted to ask you a question, because Lindsay knows you much better than me, and I found your article fascinating to read. But what's your interest in women's football? How did that all begin? How did that start?
Yeah, well, it was almost by accident, really, because when I joined Total Football Analysis back in December 2019, I had an interest in the women's game, but I never really followed it too closely. I was always following the men's game and all that sort of stuff. So when I joined, there were slots available in the team to cover the Bundesliga, the men's Bundesliga, that is, or the women's game. And, you know, I thought, well, I don't really watch too much of the Bundesliga, so I went for the women's game. And you know, here I am 4 years later, and I now write about it all over the world and you know, I've covered so many different leagues and things like that. So it was almost by accident, but I've loved it. It's been a great journey. And, you know, it's so interesting because there's always so many different things. And as I'm sure you know, Tash, you know, there's so many great players, great coaches, great leagues, great teams. You know, it's a really fascinating area of, you know, the wider football family. So, yeah, that's how I got into it. And, you know, so here I am 4 years later and you know, still doing it.
I do wonder as well, this that you've hit on in this article, David, whether it's a sign of the times and the future. You know, we already know there's a commercialisation of the women's game happening. But in terms of brand, if you have got that one club ethos, does it make it easier for women's teams in your mind? And is it something that you touched on here to make money?
It could be. It could be. I mean, you look at Arsenal, for example. They're probably one of the examples of clubs who've been doing it for a lot longer than others have. And I think it comes down, when you talk about that sort of stuff, it comes down to also how they're portrayed off the pitch as well. So, you know, it comes down to things like social media coverage. And, you know, you see all these videos of you know, the men's team and the women's team interacting with each other and the coaches interacting with each other. I mean, you know, we've seen so many videos of like Mikel Arteta and Jonas Eidevold doing, you know, joint contract signs and things like that. And it's things like that that I think really kind of unite the club. And I'm not saying we should take all this at face value, because, you know, ultimately a video is only a video. We don't know what happens once the cameras have been turned off. But it certainly appears as though there is this united approach. And then when fans watch those videos, for example, particularly fans of the men's team who aren't perhaps so aware of the women's team, they'll perhaps then become more aware of it, and then maybe that will then lead to better money coming in. So I think the tactical side of things is one thing, but it just comes across as the way that the whole club comes together. And I mean, you hear so many stories of coaches who've been working together, like Nigel Pearson at Bristol City was always a great supporter of the women's game, and Lauren Smith's spoken openly about the support that she received, and the fact that Nigel Pearson was instrumental in bringing the women's team into the same building and whatever. So, and then obviously Emma Hayes and Tim Thomas Tuchel had a quite well-known, you know, great friendship off the pitch when he was at Chelsea. So, it's all those things that I think actually, if they continue, then the money will continue, because more people will become more aware. And that's another way that women's game will grow. And hopefully the financial side of things will grow as well.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, what I loved actually with Liverpool and then moving into Melwood, they did a video, and you had actually Jurgen Klopp passing over the keys to Matt Beard, to his office. And I think that was really special. And like you said, it's shining awareness, because still not a lot of people actually are aware of women's football, which is bizarre to think, especially with the way the game has grown and the Lionesses' success and the WSL and how it's televised a lot more. But that's still not always the case. And it's just about educating people. So what would be on your wish list, David, then moving forward? You know, what things as a journalist, I guess, what's your world like, the good, the bad and the ugly? What would you like to see moving forward?
Oh, I don't know. It's such an open question, isn't it? I would love to see the women's team the women's game in general, just get more and more coverage. I mean, there are so many leagues out there that I just don't think get the coverage that they deserve. I mean, you know, WSL is obviously here, it's quite big, it's on TV, people watch it and all that sort of thing. But I think, you know, that there's a whole world out there that people aren't necessarily aware of, and that's one of the great things I've found about what I do for TFA at the minute is, you know, I've written about the league in Finland, for example, and KUPS, who won the double over there for, I think it was the first time, which would not have come across the radar of most people. So it's kind of, you know, that's what I kind of hope for the future, is that more and more leagues and more teams are brought into kind of awareness of fans. So that's probably the one thing I would say, is we know all the main leagues, we know all the main European leagues, we know the NWSL, and obviously Mexico is growing in stature as well. But there's so many more leagues out there that I think we could be aware of, and we could cover more.
Finally, as well, looking at Total Analysis and what you've been doing and the assignments you've had, I mean, just point us towards some more articles and other things that our audience might be interested in. And analysis being in the title of the publication that you work for is really important, I think, in the women's game, because a lot of fans want to see more analysis, David.
Yeah, they do. And, that's what I've always been told, is that analysis is the future. You know, people obviously, they go to games, they watch games, so they know the what's happened and who's done what and whatever. But what they want to know is how and why. They want to know the analysis of you know, why such and such happened and how it happened and why that coach made that decision and that sort of thing. So, yeah, analysis is very important, and it's certainly something that is growing in the women's game but can still grow further. And, I've written about the game all over the world. So, I mean, I'm doing a piece at the minute on a player in Colombia who's very highly rated, an 18-year-old called Gabriela Rodriguez, who plays for America de Cali. I probably pronounced that really wrong, but she's a really great player. She's very highly rated.
Tash will be stealing her for a scouting report.
But yeah, she's considered by many to sort of follow in the footsteps of Linda Caicedo and Ana Maria Guzman, wow, who obviously went to Real and Bayern Munich. So she's likely to be the next sort of big thing coming out of Colombia. But I've written about, as I say, Mexico, America, Finland, you name it, I've probably done something on it. So that's the great thing, is if we can get the footage for it, then and there's a story there, then I'll do it. And I always love finding kind of leagues and teams and players that are perhaps unknown and then bringing them to light. That's the best thing that I find, is not just covering the main leagues, but covering the unknown stories or the unknown talents, if you like, and kind of bringing them to light, giving them the spotlight they deserve. So Yeah, I mean, there's loads of stuff out there. I could be here all day naming all the various stuff that is worth reading. But yeah, hopefully people enjoy it if they do go looking for it.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I'm sure you're going to have a few more readers off the back of that as well, wanting to know exactly this joint up thinking, what it might lead to. That article was really insightful. So thank you very much.
Not a problem. Thank you very much, Lindsay. Next time.
The Offside Rule. This is a Listening Dog Media production.
Sports Social Podcast Network.